Please just relax your minds. We need to learn to be at ease. We need to learn to put things down. We need to learn to step away from the drama. And to learn how to rest. Rest in what? Just rest in our own natural awareness, our own capacity in the moment just to be present and aware, to be agendaless, for those who always live with an agenda. The path of the absolute bodhicitta, recognizing the dreamlike nature of the unfolding of phenomena and the capacity to know that that which is aware of all that in and of itself is open and spacious. So when we enter the world of activity, we can do it from a good place. Hopefully you have learned that today, how essential it is to enter the activity in a good place, from a good place. If you don't enter it from a good place, you will not have good results. So this is important. So far today, we've learned about the preliminaries, the foundation. We've learned a little bit about meditation on the unconditioned nature of reality, so to speak. And we've learned how to enter the world with an open heart, and how in our encounter with suffering, which is pervasive in this world, our own, other people, that we have an immediate way to take that suffering, to be present to it, and to transform it into something that's incredibly positive and helpful, which is compassion. Capacity to be present to suffering and to transform it into love. And then we were also given the tools to, if we want to blame anything in this world, and we are people who love to blame self-cherishing, egocentricity, self-centeredness, whether within ourselves, within other people, or the world. People cannot get out of themselves to really see and connect with others, to see the sameness of all life. And we were also given the tools of how to, even in the midst of whatever, how to maintain a joyful mind, so essential. The mind trainings are very known for their capacity to take the aversive in life and make the aversive the direct path of awakening. with the mind trainings no longer are aversive situations, aversive people, an obstacle or an impediment to our unfolding. They actually become the very source of it. So these are very powerful tools, and I think that's a maybe half a dozen out of 59. Some of them are very specific, some are sort of general. So before I talk finally about the five forces, which are really sort of a generic approach to life, are there any questions about any of the things that have been shared today, the practices and the teachings? Is anything not clear? Yes, you have a question.
When you talked earlier on about awareness going in the mind, mm-hmm. that one step, I had trouble. Yeah. I'm like, am I supposed to be following the physiological? I just didn't.
Are you supposed to be what?
Like following just the layout internally. I just wasn't connecting and understanding how to really do that.
Good. Yeah. I mean, again, this is something that we practice and teach in our tradition, but it's deep. And for most people, it is difficult because we're always looking out, you know. It's like if you had a stiff neck, you know, and somebody told you to turn around and look around, you'd be like, ah. You know, and I think in a way we have a stiff neck. We don't know how to look into our own mind. So what we're doing is not thinking, is not mapping. It's actually so much simpler. It's just like, what is your name?
Stephanie.
So Stephanie. So right now you are seeing me, right? And you would probably say, I am seeing Fred. Is that true?
Yes.
Or Stephanie is seeing Fred. Or my mind is seeing Fred. Or I'm aware of Fred, right? I mean, we could frame it in lots of different ways. Is that true? But if I ask Stephanie, is that your name? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Good. Pretty good. It's good to see I can retain things. If I said, Stephanie, that which is looking at me, that which is aware of me right now, just turn and look at that behind the eyes, that which is looking out through the eyes. What is that? So you're looking at me and just, you can continue to look at me, but just become aware of that which is aware, looking out through the eyes. What is that? So don't think. Oh. And don't think there's an answer.
Am I supposed to answer?
Yeah. I mean, but I guess what I'm saying is that, yeah, you can answer, but answer from examination, not from thinking. This is because thinking only makes it just ties the knot tighter. So when you turn in your own just awareness and you just kind of, rather than focusing on me, you focus on that which is aware of, you know, what do you see when you look for Stephanie in there?
I don't have an answer right now. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, well, just try it. Do you see a Stephanie in there?
Yes. I mean, I see it. It's just...
What do you see? Just actually, now, I mean, not just actually, what do you see when you look into your mind for Stephanie? Do you see a Stephanie back there?
Yes.
What does she look like?
She's just a lovely...
Hold on. When you look in your mind, you see right now a lovely being back there?
It's just a thought.
A thought. Okay, good. So you got to go one step further. Like if I said to you, Stephanie, well, where'd that thought come from? It had to come from somewhere, right? It just appeared. Well, where did it come from? See, it's sort of like following the breadcrumbs. Remember Hansel and Gretel?
Yes.
You know, it's like you got to follow the breadcrumbs because you want to get home. Okay, this is not just a, you know, psychological exercise, you know, the Buddhists like to do, okay? This is like you're really curious about who you really are. Like, you see, that's an interesting thought. You go, well, Stephanie, she's pretty good. She's an okay person. Well, who thought that? Who's thinking that? Where'd that thought come from? Right? Would you agree it had to, from somewhere, something, you know, see, and you're going, you're trying to really find out who you are. So it's a very intimate kind of exploration, but it is new territory for most of us because we're comfortable usually living in the world of thought, right? Is that so? I'm just trying to today give a little sense of what this is about, okay? But this is a process, you know. Okay, is that helpful? Yeah, so it's not thinking. I mean, we can think all we want, but this is like, who's the thinker? Is there a thinker? Yeah, which is an interesting way to look at things. Any other questions? I mean, they don't have to be. Yes, and then we'll move on to the five forces.
So to pursue this a little bit further and refer to something else you mentioned this morning, can you explain the individual perception of reality versus the shared perception of reality, where we can all agree, for example, this is exactly what happened today in the physical world?
Really? You think if we went around this room, everybody would make the same statement about what happened today?
If it's something simple, yes.
Like what?
Well, I have my eyeglasses.
Right. Okay.
And if
so
I drop them, they're going to hit the floor.
Right. So that is what we might consider. That is the world of the senses. It's sort of a consensual reality. Is that true? Yeah. Hopefully, unless you are psychiatrically impaired or physically impaired, like you're blind. Right? Or you have astigmatism or something, cataracts. Yeah. So in Buddhism, we call that consensual reality, the reality that is sort of present to the senses. And so what about that? So we call that consensual reality. Yeah. I mean, we want to live in it. But okay. I'm missing the question.
Consensual reality is what the name for that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So yeah, it's sort of like a shared reality that's obvious to the senses for those who have intact senses. Yeah, right. Okay. But see, once you leave that and enter the world of perceptions, then you're in trouble. Right? So that's, so obviously, the more human beings share a consensual reality, probably the safer we are. As we move into more and more where people share different consensual realities that are, projected by their mind, by their belief system, by their ideas, by their fears, we get further away and we get more division, right? And so and that's sort of what's happening in our world. Right. So, in Buddhism we say, everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. Everybody wants their loved ones to be happy. Nobody wants their loved ones to suffer, right? I mean, in that sense, we're all the same. But we don't live in that sameness, do we? And so we have the world we do, where people, see others as different than them, somehow different. We forget that we're all the same, and nobody wants to suffer. Everybody wants their loved ones to have enough food, to have enough clothing, to have enough shelter, to have medical. I mean, it's medical care. I mean, we would want that. It's so simple, isn't it, this world? Yeah. Yeah. So that's why mindfulness and learning to at least be present to reality, to see, to hear, and go, oh. I mean, in basic fundamental Buddhist mindfulness meditation, we learn simple things like, oh, seeing, I know that I'm seeing, hearing, I know I'm hearing, smelling, you know, thinking, I know that I'm thinking. So we can kind of distinguish between the sensorial and have clarity. But if there's no self-awareness, we get confused. In Buddhism, we call that we see a snake rather than the rope. Right? We see something on the ground, it's a little dark. We think what? Snake. It could bring up all kinds of things if we didn't stop and look carefully. And oftentimes it's not a snake, is it? It's just a piece of rope. And we do that all the time. I think when I came in now, Kent was talking about the world of perceptions. We endlessly see snakes where there's only ropes. All the time, all day long. So learning to know that that's a danger so we can go, yeah. Or like, you know, this profound thing, I think I heard Ken say something about, well, you know, if you really want to know what somebody's thinking or feeling, you could always ask them. You know, and on our list, that's the last thing. You know, I was like, what? And I'd much rather, you know, interpret, project, right? Rather than just realizing, I have no idea what that other person is really thinking or feeling. If I do want to know, I could ask them, right? But even then, they might not really know what they're thinking and feeling or why. So, I mean, it's just the way it is. So let me talk about the five forces, because I think they are so powerful. So this is in the section... this is called a summary of the essential instructions, train in the five forces. So this is for everyone. This is like a little framework. Whatever your practice is, whatever your non-practice is, whatever your spiritual path is, you know, you can just follow. You want to have these five forces energizing your life, okay? And now as we approach the end of the day, some of these things will seem familiar. The first force is the force of intention, impetus. You know, this is the first force. This is the force we get up with in the morning. Okay? What is my aspiration for today? This is when we enter all situations. What is my intention here? Is my intention to do good? Is my intention always in every encounter to bring value? Is my intention to do no harm? Is my intention to always bring benefit to other people? Is my intention to always come from a place where the self-reference is not dominating? Right? So there are many ways to frame this. But overall, it's what we call bodhicitta. Right, that ultimately in the Mahayana tradition is the impetus. You know, my purpose every day, every week, every year, in every situation is, can I, live in an awakened way? Can I always practice wholesomeness? And can I always work for the benefit of beings? I mean, that's like all encompassing, right? And so wherever you show up, home, work, with yourself, that what is the impetus for my life? What is the inspiration, the aspiration, the intention? Okay? So that's the first force to motivate us. And again, some of these things are just obvious, but they need to be reminded. The second force that needs to be is the force of familiarization. Well, that's what's translated here. Habituation, which, you know, we somehow think, it's very interesting, you know, that many people, when they come to Dharma, or they come to meditation, or they come to spiritual life, or they come to change, or whatever you want to call it, they think what? This is hard. I don't know how hard it is. It's really hard to change, right? I mean, this is hard, right? Or they get impatient. You know, God, I mean, I've been reading books on spirituality and Dharma for years. I can't believe that I'm not more further along than I, you know, I've been, I go to Sunday meditation once a week. I've been on retreats. I mean, somehow I should be much further along. So we often get impatient, right? Well, the force of familiarization, habituation, really reminds us that it is only through becoming more and more familiar with these practices and teachings that they will become part of us. It's not going to happen by itself. Now, as I say these words, I think this is what we call a no-brainer. And yet, we somehow live in somehow, like somehow it should just happen on its own. You know what I mean? It's like I can continue throughout the day to continue to cultivate the critical mind, the judgmental mind, to cultivate, negativity, to cultivate anger and fear, you know, in the privacy of my own mind. And that somehow tomorrow when I wake up, I'm going to be this really wholesome, happy human being. I mean, can you see there's a little something not connected there? You see? Now, just stop a moment, think. Just kind of close your eyes and just go. And again, everybody here is a good person and has good qualities, but we're here because of the other side. And if you think about it, if you think about the afflictive mind states, the negative mind states, all those things that arise in you, can everybody identify a couple of those within themselves? I mean, I'm not going to ask you to publicly disclose, so this could be very private. Right? Everybody know those kind of mind states? Are they familiar mind states? Why do you think they're so familiar? Because we've been working them. We've been practicing them for many of us for decades and decades. Right? Can you see? We've just been, but we haven't been conscious. We've just been practicing them very diligently. Right? Even though when we step back and look at it, we go, it's only causing me suffering. It's only sabotaging my relationship. It's only, you know, it's like, this is not doing any good to anybody, right? And yet, why do they keep arising? Because we're so familiar. Because we've just practiced them. So in modern parlance, they've become our default, right? A default means what? What? We do it without thinking. It's our default. You see, our habitual ways are just, they're so easy. We don't have to do anything to be angry, do we? To be irritated, to be judgmental, do we? It's the easiest thing in the world. Right? Why is it so easy? Because it's just habitual. It just arises by itself. All our stuff, and everybody has their own list of stuff, but all our stuff, we're just very familiar with it. Now, when we begin to kind of wake up and begin to have criteria for wholesome and unwholesome, we begin to have aspiration and tension, we then say, yeah, I want to be different. I want to act differently. I want to feel differently. I want to speak differently. I want to think differently. I want to have a different kind of mind, right? I don't want it just to be superficial. Well, how's that going to occur? Practice, which means familiarization. We just have to, you know, if we cultivated the wholesome as much as we have diligently cultivated the unwholesome, things would be different, right? I mean, this is not, you know, many people reduce spiritual, you know, to some kind of mystical or esoteric. There's nothing mystical or esoteric about it. This is just science, cause and effect, right? So first is this aspiration, which is just See, that energizes us. Always kind of make sure I'm always moving in my life in the direction I want. Can you see? We need that energy. That's the power of aspiration. Right? Whatever it is. Right? It keeps us on the path. Everybody in here, you know, we work jobs that we don't like, we don't enjoy. We do tasks that we don't enjoy. We get an education and have to take classes that we'd rather, the last thing in the world we want, right? What gets us through? Intention. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah, I see, you know, this is, you know, there's a place I want to go and this will get me there. So I stay on it. But this is different. This is the same awareness, but it's an understanding that, yeah, I need that energy of aspiration, intention. And secondly, I realize that whatever I'm doing that I want to bring into my life, it will only come into my life if I become more and more familiar with it. How do I become more and more familiar with it? I simply practice, 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 make mistakes, practice, fall down, pick myself up, get back on the road 100 times a day if need be. And then we'll change. I mean, it's simple. But we have this mystical belief that somehow it's going to happen by itself. Right? The third force is the force of virtuous seeds. You know, virtuous seeds. This is so, it means, you know, that I'm always cultivating goodness. Wholesomeness, positivity within myself, in all my relations, in all my activities, right? I'm always cultivating virtue. And I have given up the cultivation of non-virtue, of the unwholesome, in the actions of my body, speech, and mind. So this is, again, if we want a different life, we're not going to have a good life and a happy life and a joyous life and all these kinds of things if in our mind and in our actions of our body, speech, and mind, we are cultivating the unwholesome, the unhealthy. Remember cause and effect? Everybody remember that early teaching? We thought, oh, that's one of the preliminaries. I am so far beyond those. I just appear in the stratosphere of the Dharma realization. You know? Yeah, we have to cultivate those seeds of virtue, of wholesomeness, of positivity. And the more of those seeds that we plant within ourselves, the more of them we water and we cultivate, we will feel their blossoming. And what is their blossoming? We feel good. Not in a goodness like where I get my way or, you know what I mean, that kind of goodness, or I'm having a momentary, you know, pleasure or something, things are working my way, but it's a different kind of sense of good. We all know that, right? That sense of wholesomeness, you know? You know what I'm saying? You kind of, when you just feel good, you know you're acting right, right? It feels good. And why not feel that way all the time? So, the force of familiarization, the force of cultivating positive seeds. The fourth is the force of repudiation. This is an interesting one. You know, it's like, I really enjoy it. I think it's an interesting one. Because I think Americans, we don't like this one, you see, because it's often translated. See, here he's kind of picked a middle ground word, like repudiation. And there's another translator who calls it exposure. You know, we need to expose those negative things. But actually, in the Tibetan, it's closer to disgust. Ooh, we don't like that. Isn't this a positive path? But I like it because it kind of has that emotional quality. You know, it's sort of like you know how you don't want to be, you know. You don't want to be egocentric. You don't want to be self-centered. You don't want to be angry. You don't want to be saying harmful things to other people. You know what I mean? Or even yourself, right? You know all that stuff. But if it's just intellectual, you know what I'm saying? There's oftentimes the intellect will not hold up to the force of our habit energy. You know what I'm talking about? And so this kind of, like, I just repudiate that stuff. Yuck. You know what I mean? It's like when you see yourself acting selfishly or only thinking of yourself or not thinking of others or you're not acting kindly, you have this kind of, ooh. You know, let me start over here. I mean, it's interesting that that's listed as one of the, and I think it's because it's got that emotional quality to it, that kind of that yuck factor. You know, it's like yuck when we see ourselves acting in ways. You know, it's interesting because we certainly have it for others, yeah. Right? I mean, ugh, the way they're acting. Disgusting. You right? This is like true confessions here, but I mean, do you see what I'm saying? We are so good at having that kind of feeling toward the actions of others or our public figures or something, but do we have that same kind of sensibility when it comes to our own actions? You know? And not only our own actions that or words that can be seen, but even more important, the ones that go on in the privacy of our own mind, where it's really it all begins. You know, have I really kind of take, you know, I'm really repudiating this way of thinking. And then when it arrives, I go, ugh, I don't want to go there. Yuck. Okay? So, and sometimes it's called exposure. It's a little nicer. I like the disgust and the repudiation, but the exposure could mean you're just, you know, you're just exposed. You're willing to expose those unwholesome qualities within yourself to your own self-awareness, right? But my concern is sometimes we can be very insightful and exposed, but still not do anything. And I think it's important that we have a little bit of energy that goes, I don't want to go there. That's no way to be, right? I want to be like this. So there's a little something that moves us. Is that clear? So I like it. And then the fifth force is the fourth of aspiration, and this is this is very kind of traditional in the Mahayana Buddhist tradition, the great path, the path of compassion, etc., is that we enter all our actions with this aspiration to be of benefit, to be of help, right? To beings, including ourselves, to awaken ourselves. But at the end of whatever it is, that action we've done, we dedicate it to the benefit of all, right? Which again, I think has a lot to do to help us, you know, because part of what we like to do is even when we do good is we like what? We like to get the benefit of it, right? We like to be noticed, we like applause, we like, you know, right? And this is like, it's like, the final giving away, right? So if any benefit comes to me from this action, you know, I give it away. I give it to the benefit of others. I don't need it. Again, it has this kind of quality of just reinforcing that in Buddhism, we call it generosity. You know, usually at the end of all our events, somebody makes the Dana talk. Everybody know who's been around us? It's the Dana talk or the Dana, you know, which is, and it refers to this Buddhist practice of generosity. But generosity is bigger than putting money in the bowl, which is, of course, you know, is a necessity. you know, true generosity means I let go of everything. And everything I have, my body, my speech, my mind, all my abilities, all my capacities, and everything I have, all my material things. Ultimately, I wanted to bring benefit to others. Right? It's not for me. One thing is what? I'm going to die anyhow. Right? So, I mean, this holding on to our things is kind of ridiculous. But it's also kind of acknowledging, you know, what am I here for? Right? And if I have abilities, if I have energy, if I have a body, if I have financial means of whatever, you know, it doesn't mean we don't take care of ourselves, you know what I'm saying, in a kind of a basic sense. But, you know, maybe I can do good with this. Right? Maybe I can be of help with this. You know, with generosity of time. Many of us are very careful with our time. Don't want to give away too much of my own time. Right? This is a very interesting idea. Right? Because usually when we are being helpful to others, benefiting others, being there for others, we feel good. And oftentimes when we talk about having time to ourselves, we're just kind of passing time, wasting time. You know, if we're really honest. Or there may be more meaningful ways to be using our time and our resources of all types. So this, again, it's like with the intention, the aspiration of where I want this day to go, this encounter to go, this lifetime to go, with this understanding that I just need to become more and more familiar with the practices. I need to really be very consciously creating wholesomeness and goodness in all my actions and all my thoughts, all my words. I need to have this kind of repudiation of unwholesomeness and selfishness. And finally, this sense of I dedicate everything to the benefit of others. Again, for those you go, how about, yeah, you can take care of yourself. You know, we're one of the others. But we're not the most important others, are we? We think we're most important. We're not most important. Dalai Lama says, look, there's 6 billion people in the world, there's only one of me. Who's more important? See, most of us would go, me. Right? And our president would show us the way. And we laugh at him, but yet many of us are the same. We just, you know, we have better social skills. So it's also good to have a sense of humor about all this. Because again, you know, it's like with the Greeks, you know, tragedy and comedy, it's really the same. It's the same story. You look at it from one side, it's a tragedy. You look at it from the other side, it's a comedy. And there are many things, again, that go on in this world that are truly tragic and sad. But at the other hand, you can look another way and go, this is so ridiculous, isn't it? The way people are, the way people act, the way they treat each other. The way we, you know, blow ourselves up with self-importance, with our self-concern. But again, you know, so it's good to have a sense of humor, be lighthearted, and this practice will give that to us. It's heavy, but it's really ultimately very light. Always have the support of a joyous mind. key phrase here. So good, we're just about time for closing ceremony. We end at 4 o'clock, and we have a bunch of people. And we have a 30 minutes for closing circle. And Paul, we have people online. How many people do we have online? 15 people online. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that to you, Paul. You have to take care of your people, okay? Yeah, so why don't we just, like, we'll just do it all together, okay, without a big deal. So just everybody stay where they are. And I think, just close your eyes a minute. And those who have been here, this is kind of how we do it. And again, it's been a sort of a full day from 9 o'clock. Meditation, teachings, preliminaries, all kinds, and loving kindness practices, and the alchemical exchange of transforming suffering into compassion, drive all blames into one, always have support of a joyful mind, the five forces, and what else has been going on today? Mindful eating and walking. So we've all can participate in the same schedule, activities, and we've all kind of heard the same teachings. But the key thing, again, is that each of us are individuals. We're all here encountering the teachings in our own way. And so how we, you know, what has struck us, what's been most significant to us or meaningful to us, or kind of where we've gone, yeah, I want to remember this, or I want to take this home with me, or, you know, it's those are the kind of things I'm interested in each of us sort of touching. And we can just go around the room, we'll pass the mic, like to hear from everybody. You know, we don't have to share everything, but sort of like, you know, in like 30 seconds or less, which is actually a lot of time. What has been, you know, what's been most meaningful today? What do you want to remember? And I only do this because the nature of our society is we're just endlessly, you know, taking it in and then it goes out. All right? Because we just move on to the next thing. You know, we don't get on our horse out there and, you know, ride home for 4 hours. You know, walk where we have time to kind of mull over. You know what I'm saying? It's just too quick. Many of us probably already are thinking, sure, when Fred's going to end, you know, we're going to get somewhere to go at 4, or I got to be somewhere by 4:30. You know what I mean? It's like, can you see where? And so this whole day will just become a memory. And all your insights and all your, will just disappear. So it's important that we take a moment now, right? Whatever. And it doesn't have to be, you just, whatever is really meaningful to you. Right? And it may not, you know, could be things you want to bring into your life, things you want to get out of your life, things you want to remember to do, things you want to remember not to do. I mean, you know, it could be anything. I'm not fishing for anything. But it's really just close your eyes, take a minute. And just, you know, what for you has been most significant today, most meaningful, you want to remember, not to forget. Sort of we want to kind of, I call it, we want to create that bridge between being here at the day long today and the life we're going back to. You know, there's got to be a bridge, something to connect it. Or else it could just drift away. So it's asking us to, and again, you know, we may not share everything, but I just take some time now to kind of make those connections. And I really encourage you, if today has been meaningful in any way, the things you've heard, the things you've experienced, please reflect on it when you leave here. That's the only way it's going to get in. And the analogy is, you know, if food is going to be absorbed into our body and of benefit, it's got to be chewed and chewed and then digested, right? If it's not chewed well, if it's not digested well, it won't bring health, you know, vitality to the body. So in the same way, when we have experiences and practices, they have to be digested.